Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We're at the point of finishing this conversation regarding the Whiskey Rebellion, probably giving you a lot more detail than, you know, if anybody has ever taken the time to go through just this little facet of our history. But I want you to understand that it is more than a facet. This is where the Republic was tried and certain things were applied and they worked. And other things were changed, and this is why it's important to point out, even though they call the militia they didn't have to create the IRS. They didn't have to create the ATF, right? The Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, Enforcement of Excise Laws. No, they don't. The federal government doesn't need that, and they can't do that because the Constitution doesn't let them. The Constitution requires that they call forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union. Our own people have to support the laws of tyranny, which is the final checks and balances placed into this beautiful document called the Constitution, where we, the people, become the ultimate deciders if the federal government's laws that they claim to be in pursuant to the Constitution are legitimate and constitutional, as well as civil, as well as respecting our liberty. Because bottom line, we the people have that ultimate say. We're the final checks on the tyranny of government. But they've created and perverted the Constitution so much and so well that they've been able to create a plethora of standing armies. It's that bad, my friends. This is why if we don't execute Republic Review and get the federal government back into compliance, when they pull the plug, because they're spending us into oblivion, and when they can't service the debt, when all of a sudden this next crisis comes along, and they said, this is what we have to set aside the Constitution. We can't continue anymore as a government. We have to move into this global government and a single currency and single government. We just can't do it anymore. These are the straws that broke the can. I want you to understand everything that they're doing up to now to create this emergency is all unconstitutional. They have no authority to be doing any of this. The debt that they have created is all unconstitutional. We're not obligated to paying that. I don't care what China says. If we have to go to war because China wants to commit Harry Kerry, which is a Japanese thing, I understand that, but if they want to commit suicide, then okay. We're going to have to go to war, and we will have to defend ourselves as appropriate. I'm going to tell you that the Chinese people will not be happy when all of a sudden they are being affected. They're already not happy with the fact that they're living under the tyranny that they are, and this is why Hong Kong is in the throes, and this is why if we really want to take the advantage here, we have to put China on its heels. That's why I keep on saying Trump, we need a leader in this nation as a president to actually send the message to the world that, hey, you know, our Constitution allows you to become a state in the United States. You have to go through a process of change, but if you believe your liberty, your individual liberty and individual sovereignty is worth the change that you have to go through, then you're welcome to come, and we'll be happy to help and assist you in this change of your culture, this change of your currency, the change of your language and those types of things so that you can function fully and engage fully in the United States of America. And if we want to change the name to the United States of the world, under the U.S. Constitution, the United States Constitution, that's how it should be. Because the good Lord gave us, there's no doubt in my mind, he gave us everything we needed in this Constitution to actually pull us back from their grasp and their chains that they have deceived us with. And these I'll just call them these spells these evil spells that they have used, their lies and deceit, to get us to believe that this is all legitimate. Their house of cards is so illegitimate. Why are we wasting time with sovereign citizens movements and all of these other myopic movements? Why are we wasting time with an organization, let's say the John Birch Society, that only wants to be the only kid on the block that won't work with anybody else on these principles of individual liberty and individual sovereignty? We need everybody at the table. They're welcome to be here, but they won't come because they want to have full control and they have to have the word over how things are going to be presented and so forth. I mean, they're tantamount to mind control, or the old saying, invented here. This is what we agree. This is how we're going to say this. And this is how we're going to act. And it's almost like the John Birch Society has completely lost their moral compass of why that organization was even started in the first place. They have an opportunity. And I've said this before. I've said this a couple of times now, because I put it on the table. They have the opportunity to actually become, you know, an integral part in restoring the Constitution by actually creating, you know, by helping and assisting and canonizing the Constitution, and then creating a support entity to go into these House legislatures so that they can actually help these legislatures understand what is constitutional, what isn't constitutional. And any time there's a question on whether something's constitutional or not, the first thing that they should do is they should convene a tribunal of the states, which is what we call republic review, and let the states actually go through the ratification debates, very specifically and only the ratification debates, and then understanding the spirit and the intent and the definitions and terms provided, actually come up with what they believe, you know, like this whole thing on the militia or anything that is potentially suspect. The states have to decide what is going to be constitutional, because they are the only ones, as Madison clearly stated, that have the authority. They are the only parties to the compact. As you can tell, I get excited. As you can tell, I do love what I do. And, you know, as you might know, I have told you, if you haven't heard this, because I don't say it a lot, I love to be right. It was one of those things that the first time I won an argument with my father at the dinner table in second grade over a math discussion, a math formula argument, boy, I was so proud of myself. And I felt so good that I was able to win an argument with, you know, the man I revered. But I knew at that time in my life, I knew in my age of that point in time that we all make mistakes. I never thought that my parents were perfect. I wasn't that big of an imbecile. I may have done imbecilic things. And I use that word because I used that word with a John Birch Society leader, and he took real offense when I called the John Birch Society, these people, the way they were behaving, as imbeciles. And they were. And I told him, I said, I've called Marines imbeciles. Why are you having a defense? And I'm giving you some information so that you can put this into context. This was the regional director. I mean, this guy controlled half of this nation's, you know, John Birch leadership and so forth. I mean, he was huge. And so he took so offense, he personalized that. And because he personalized that, he made the outright decision to say, I don't care what GR stands for, he's my enemy. And that's how they think. That's how people, not how they think, that it would be an improper judgment to say that everybody in the John Birch Society thinks that way. But that is how many people operate. They personalize things. Have you ever watched a TV show, a sitcom, with anybody in your family, like your wife, husband, or what have you? And it's, you know, there's something that is playing that, you know, is a hot button issue. They're talking about something that's hot button that you or they do. And because they've personalized that and they've taken ownership of that position, when they see that, they turn to you and go, uh-huh, you getting this? I mean, has that happened to you? Because that it's natural that people personalize things. You know what? That's how we actually destroy relationships, by personalizing. We have to use common sense, logic, and reason. We also have to use love. And we have to use forgiveness. We do have to use the emotional side, but we cannot lose our common sense, logic, and reasoning, because that is where we make the best decisions. And when we apply those decisions with love, temperance, and those types of things, and forgiveness, and then it even keeps us on a higher moral ground, a higher road in life. And I look to my wife and I go, you know, the only reason I'm on the highest road I am right now in my life is because of her. I mean, you know, there's times and points where I say, you know, I was thinking about maybe I should do this. I know it's maybe not the right thing to do, but it would really help. And she says, no, you know, you'd regret that. You'd lose sleep over that because you know it's the wrong thing to do. And so she's kind of like my keel. She's kind of like, you know, that anchor that helps me stay on that high road. And I'm so blessed. Anyway, anywho, too much personal stuff. As you know, the show is sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that is going to give you the academic evidence, because we're reading what Washington actually said in his sixth inaugural address regarding the Whiskey Rebellion. We're reading his words, his view of what he did and what had to happen. And so we're going to get back to that, but I do have a couple of things I want to bring up that is, you know, a little bit more of a tirade, so forgive me. We will get to two more things before we get to closing on the Whiskey Rebellion. But we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so one of the things that really it just frustrates me, and I've talked about the Tory acts and getting rid of people that have no respect for individual liberty and individual sovereignty. As U.S. citizens, it doesn't matter. If you cannot support the U.S. Constitution, then you shouldn't be here. You should be somewhere else, or you should be revoked of your citizenship, and we need to start moving back towards allowing inhabitants. You know, I'm okay with people that want to, you know, be a nuisance, because you know what? Those nuisances, those people that call you out on your hypocrisy, they actually keep us in check. They keep us in line. because, you know, there's lots of times when we think nobody's looking that we might be able to get away with doing something because those temptations are with us all the time. I mean, I feel those temptations. I at a certain point, you stop succumbing to them, and they become less and less and less, but they're still there. There's still that essence or that sense of that potential, you know, temptation. And I just want you to understand that the framers understood the danger of ideologues that live amongst us that are enemies to liberty. That those who think that it is okay that we be subjugated to government, that government, you know, dictates everything, in contrast and in direct conflict with the government that we have and the Constitution. So we need to really evaluate, you know, how we're going to allow anybody, whether it be a religious faith, it doesn't matter. Whether it be, you know, a party, it doesn't matter. If you're not in line with supporting the Constitution, you're an enemy to the Constitution, and we can't allow those types of people to just be running unchecked and participating in our government, because they're the ones, you know, when we start hanging all of these tyrants for treason, okay, then I believe people will start getting the message that, you know, we woke the bear. We woke the dog. You know, there's a friend of mine who I say I worked for. He, you know, came to work for me. But I, as the boss or manager, leader or what have you, I always felt that those people who I brought in, I worked for them. And so there's this gentleman that I worked for that, you know, he would come and, you know, come and get me and talk to me and tell me about what's going on. And I would always, you know, move the obstacles and boulders and those things for him. And he was always attuned to the politics at work. And one of the things he said is that, you know, people need to understand that I am the dirty dog. You know, I'm the devil dog, you know, as the Marine Corps, you know, aptly has been named. And he said that, you know, people don't understand that, you know, if I'm doing the right things, they need to just let me alone and let my team be in doing those things that are right, because we are doing what's right. We may not be following the process. We don't do things right according to the process. We actually do things that are right. And so, you know, I told people, make the decision. If the way that you have it is wrong, then do the right thing and document it so that we can actually duplicate it and own that and so forth. And anyway, he made his comment. He says, you know, people just don't understand that you're the one person that they should never mess with, because once you get it in your craw, once they've got you so upset, that bottom line is you're going to, you know, just like the Marine Corps, they would just lay down this vengeance of fury that they regret the day that they kicked me. And I'd like to think that I've shed some of those things, that I, you know, can be a little bit more empathetic and more understanding and so forth. But this was early on when I was transitioning from my Marine Corps career into my civilian engineering career. And it was kind of interesting. It was definitely life has been a very interesting journey. But bottom line, those people who cannot support, when we see the Olympics, when we see these people out there, the social justice warriors, saying, you know, I can't stand up for that flag. Well, we're not asking you to stand up for that flag. We're asking you to stand up for that Constitution. There's nowhere in the Constitution that we're supporting a government, a party, or anything other than that Constitution. If you can't support it, then so state, and we will revoke your citizenship. And then if we don't want to have inhabitants that can't support the Constitution, then we'll move you to wherever you want to go with the shirt on your back or what have you. Now, remember, the Tory Acts did not allow these people to take their wealth, sell their property, or anything else. You know, they lost all of that as loyalists. I don't think we're in a position where we need to do that, but I'm inclined to basically say, gone. You don't deserve to be here. And I believe the Black Panther's name was Grover Cleveland. I'm bad with names. But he even learned that lesson when he went on the lam in the 70s, when they wanted him for the potential murder of, I think, a law enforcement officer to stand trial. He went on the lam. He hid in Cuba. He hid in Russia. He hid in the communist countries. And in the 80s, after like 10 years on the run or so, he comes back to the United States, faces his day in court, spends time in jail, and spends the rest of his life trying to teach, you know, the Black community that life is better. You know, he has more freedom in a jail in America than walking on the streets in Cuba or any communist country. Do not buy these lies. And he dedicated the rest of his life to helping people understand how he was deceived and how he doesn't want the deception to move forward. Unfortunately, he was never given the limelight because he was teaching the antithetical narrative of what the media and the deep state had been basically projecting all the way back into the 50s and the 40s. I mean, the deep state goes all the way back into the 30s when FDR started projecting collectivism and trying to get people to, you know, the Fanfare for the Common Man was a song that came from FDR's era in trying to get people to take on socialism and collectivism. You got to understand our history, and the deep state goes a lot further and a lot deeper than most people realize. Anyway, one other thing I want to add, because it's happened a couple of times, and I'm really overwhelmed and I'm humbled when I get an email and or comments, and I want to state that, you know, I'm honored and humbled when I get your feedback to say, you need to be in front of Trump. You need to be, you know, telling Trump all of these things because he needs to hear this message. If Trump heard this, it would probably turn his heart. And this kind of speaks to, you know, the faith that some people have in Trump, myself and others. And I think that that's great, but it's very humbling. And I just want to thank you for, you know, making these nice comments, whether it be a Facebook message, whether it be an email, or whether it's, you know, comment on the phone or what have you. Thank you so much. I do appreciate, you know, your recognizing, you know, the truth here. And I can't say this without saying what an honor it has been in serving my country in this capacity, and what a true honor it would be to continue to do so in serving in that capacity, to be, you know, the constitutional advisor of what it would take to actually get this nation back on track for Trump. I mean, yeah, okay, I would do that. I'm not looking to get rich. I'm not looking to even go down the annals of history. What I am looking for is full abeyance to the Constitution. And I can't do that alone. Trump, as a president, he can't do that alone. We need the states. And what we need to do is we need to recognize and actually motivate state legislatures to do this. We need, I think the guy's name is Chad Christensen. No, it's not. It's... I don't have it in front of me because I'm bad with names. He's the gentleman from North Dakota, and the two ladies and gentlemen, and those legislators in South Dakota, North Dakota, Montana, and Idaho, and Wyoming, you know, Bob Wharf, the champion of Republican View and the champion of the Constitution in Wyoming. I mean, we got to tip our hats to these men because these are the men that are changing these ships, these sovereign states, in, you know, turning about and taking on the federal government and forcing it into compliance. They're the heroes. You know, if I can be a cause to that change, then I am humbly grateful. And it is the least I and you can do in helping these leaders do their job. That's all I've got to say. Thank you so much. And I'm always so humbled when people, you know, say kind words. They come back and go, you know, I really love this. You're doing this and that. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I'll even say this because I don't plug my books that often. But when I do, it just seems like there's this, you know, this the surge in people buying my books. I had sold some books at Red Pill Expo, and I didn't go there to sell books, but I figured, well, I'll take them there just to help offset my travel because I'm not making any money any other way. So, okay. And at least somebody's getting something for their money. It's just not a financial contribution to say, here's $100. Well, that's nice, but, you know, you deserve to get something. And I want you to be more than just a financial contributor. And anybody that wants to get involved, call me. Use your money for you to do these things. You can actually be far more powerful in exercising your resources and utilizing them to our advantage in your state as a leader. Let me help you become that leader. Let me help you be the change that we all need to be. Anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos with the conclusion of the Whiskey Rebellion. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so what we've been kind of going through is kind of a collection of somebody else's view of Washington's comments regarding the Whiskey Rebellion. These are very insightful and they're very helpful. The one thing that I probably would be remiss if I didn't do, but I'm not going to do it this time. Next time we cover the Whiskey Rebellion, because I'll pull in some more resources. And the reason I'm putting this under such a magnifying glass is because this proved what parts of the Constitution worked and how the perceptions had changed so quickly out the gate from the ratification debates. And so it's worthy of the analysis, because when we look at the protest of what these men did, and when we look at what is going on in this Bolshevik revolution of property damage, physical damage to people, harm and killing people, these protests in Portland, Seattle, the public servants of those cities and states have blood on their hands and have violated their oath of office. And I cannot believe that the people of these states and the people of these United States aren't taking a stand on the Constitution and demanding the removal and banishment at a minimum of every single public servant that sat on their hands and allowed these atrocities and these violations of the Constitution to occur on their watch. And so we have to become you know, as I tell people, I think I've said this before, we can't be nice anymore. Nice was, Jesus Christ was not nice. When he went into the temple, he turned over tables. He banged heads together. He threw them out of the temple. That wasn't nice. He did what was right, and he supported the law of his Father, the law of God, right? And so we have a constitution and a law we must support and protect. If we don't, and we allow it to continually be marginalized, it will not only be forgotten, it will be wiped away, and we will rue the day. We have to hold, the Constitution's clear. These people have disqualified themselves from public service at a minimum. I believe that they've supported treason and supported the, you know, when Mayor Durkin allowed and supported these men by giving them aid and comfort, water and barriers and everything else for this autonomous zone, she was supporting rebellion against the Constitution, and therefore she had committed treason. The whole world knows that she committed treason, and she should be dangling at the end of a rope once she has been tried and convicted. And she should be punished fully under the law. Because once we start doing that, once we actually hold people fully accountable, because the days of playing nice have proven that they don't work, that we have to, you can't just agree to disagree anymore. We have to support the Constitution, and we have to demand that every public servant live up to their oath of office. So I told you I was going to get into any more rants, so forgive me. But this is all related to the Whiskey Rebellion and why it is so important. So in 1795, the Third Congress replaced the original statute with the 1795 Militia Act, which removed or reduced several of the major checks on the president's authority to call forth the militia in times of insurrection. Among others, the new act removed the requirement of getting an incident court order and removed the requirement to proclaim a dispersal before the militia is called out. Clearly, our founders listen to this now. I'm going to call this out as you know, scuttlebutt and as unsupported, you know, editorializing. Clearly, our founders envisioned that Congress owned the power to call out the militia. Absolutely. But in 1795, they permanently delegated that power to the president and authorized the presidents to act decisively, expeditiously, and unilaterally in times of military emergencies. I disagree. I completely disagree. The only way they can do this legally and constitutionally is by going into the Constitution and amending it. This is why, when they realized that the Electoral College failed in the 1800 election in 1803, Congress quickly acted on their own, and instead of just creating some regulations, why? Who was president? Who was in the presidency at that point in time? Oh, that was Thomas Jefferson and James Madison. And they were not going to just let Congress create a statute and a regulation to some law without abiding by the Article 5 process of making the change to the Constitution. They realized and revered the importance of using the amendment process to make the changes legitimate. Everything that this gentleman just, or whoever asserted this, editorializing, was wrong. Absolutely wrong. Washington met with the first rebels, and again, this is back to the history story side. Washington met with the first rebels, who assured him the militia was not needed and that order had been restored. Washington opted to retain the military option until proof of submission was apparent. The large and well-armed militia marched into western Pennsylvania after going 300 miles and was met with angry citizens but little violence. When a rebel army didn't appear, the militia rounded up suspected rebels instead. However, the rebellion's instigators had already fled and the militia's prisoners weren't involved in the rebellion. They were marched to Philadelphia to stand trial regardless. Only two men were actually found guilty. Many of the other men had already went into the woods. But I want you to understand, why is it that they're not talking about, you know, this trial into better detail? This is where I think that we need to get into that story a little bit better. But the fact is that the trial of treason will be injected the next time we cover this. But they didn't even mention that these men were found guilty. Oh, yeah, they did. Only two men were found guilty of treason, and both were pardoned by Washington. Now, I think that was nice. I think it was nice by Washington. Washington, he was a very hard man. If you were under his charge, if you were in his ranks as you know, his part of the army, whether that was before the Revolutionary War as a captain or as a colonel or what have you, he did not take lightly to men that ran from their duties, that left, you know, the field of battle. He would shoot them in the back for abandoning their post. I mean, without hesitation. That's what you do. You abandon your post, you get shot in the back. And so people learned that you do not abandon your post around Washington. And so later on, while Washington was the general and, you know, fighting the Revolutionary War and even afterwards, what some people don't understand about George Washington was the fact that here's a man that owned slaves, and these slaves ran away from him. Some of them ran away. And to their chagrin, they realized that the people that they ran into the arms of were far worse than Washington. And they recollected and they remembered. And so Washington actually went after every single one of these slaves that ran away and brought them back. And those slaves that ran away and those slaves that knew those slaves that ran away, they didn't run away again. They knew that Washington loved them and cared for them. And when I say loved them, when they were sick, he tended to them and he stayed with them to make sure that their needs, their temporal and their medical attention and needs were taken care of to the best of his ability. He did everything he could to, you know, keep these people alive and to make their lives, you know, manageable and as good as possible that you could. I mean, if you looked at the slave quarters and so forth, you could tell they didn't have the same lifestyle. But they had a much better lifestyle than many others that had no, I mean, those people that looked at slaves as literally property, Washington was not one of those men. He wanted to, and actually, he put a death warrant on Martha's head when he said, when Martha dies, my slaves can go free. So what she had to do was she had to actually free his slaves just due to the fact that she couldn't keep them around because they were already beginning to conspire to kill her because they wanted their freedom. Can you blame them? So they started learning, you know, because they wanted to do the right thing. Washington was one of those guys who wanted to do the right thing. And so he made a mistake by putting a death sentence on his wife. And so he should never have made that known that she was to do that. That should have been a secret and should have been a well-guarded secret so that, you know, his wishes could have been carried out. But there were others that had done other things. And I think, you know, we've talked about how some slave masters, and I believe I've already talked about a particular gentleman that, you know, made sure that the doctor took care of his will and testament in freeing all of his slaves. This was the changing of the attitude that came from the Enlightenment of the American Enlightenment during the Enlightenment era was so bright and so filled with the love of Christ that it affected and changed the world. This is why it just upsets anybody that understands the Constitution when we see these ingrates, when we see these indolent children, you know, or these, you know, poorly adjusted adults, and you know how they behave and make this wrongful, disparaging remarks about our Constitution and about our nation's history because they believe the slanted yellow journalism because it kind of feeds their emotions and helps them find relevance. Anyway, we will be back. There's one more paragraph, a couple more lines, and we'll be done with the Whiskey Rebellion. Forgive me for dragging this on. We'll be done right after this. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so the last two lines is this. The federal response, why the Whiskey Rebellion was so important, and this is the history page telling this why this is important. The federal response to the Whiskey Rebellion was widely believed to be a critical test of federal authority, one that Washington's fledgling government met with success. The whiskey tax that inspired the rebellion remained in effect until 1802. Under the leadership of President Thomas Jefferson and the Republican Party, you know, parentheses here, which, like many citizens, opposed Hamilton's Federalist tax policies, the tax was repealed after continuing to be almost impossible to collect. So in other words, they didn't go off and create an ATF, an alcohol, tobacco, and firearms agency to make sure that, you know, they're in compliance with the federal excise laws. Or, as a matter of fact, they didn't have any laws. They had no jurisdiction over alcohol, tobacco. Well, so to be honest, when they passed the Prohibition Act, they then had jurisdiction over alcohol. But then it was repealed. So now they no longer have jurisdiction over alcohol. There's nothing in the Constitution that gives them jurisdiction over tobacco. There are excise taxes, and they have the ability to make and create excise taxes, but why isolate just the one? They don't have a tire agency, right? They have the ATF, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Fire Agency. Well, how come they don't have a tire agency? Because they have taxes on tires. They have taxes on other things. Why don't they have those kinds of... Because these were big, the sin businesses were big business, and they wanted to go after them with as much fury as they possibly could, because squeezing these agencies that they had no jurisdiction other than for taxation. And so bottom line, what the government needed to do was they needed to go back to the states, what the United States government under Washington and Adams and Jefferson, they needed to go back to the states and say, look, you know, we're passing these excise tax laws, and we need these amendments so that you guys can enforce these things. It would have forced the states back into, because again, as I've told you, the Articles of Confederation, many of the problems that we have dealt with as a republic is because the states were the bad players. The states were trying to create fiefdoms. They were jealous of this federal government, so they were always trying to get an advantage. And you know what? Because they were doing that, it made it real easy for the federal government to all of a sudden start appeasing the states by saying, you know what, if you do this, we'll give you some money for that. They started doing quid pro quo, they started doing unconstitutional things, and they started usurping state powers, and the states unconstitutionally allowed them to do it. Now, when I say that, that means that at any point in time, the states can actually take a stand and say, you know what, we had no business doing this, and the bottom line is the only way you can legitimately do that is through an amendment. There's no statute of limitations in the Constitution that says, hey, if you can fool us or con us into following, you know, these violations of the Constitution, after 20 years they become constitutional. That does not exist. Those statutes of limitations are not there. Bottom line, we have a mess to clean up. That's not going to take long. And as I mentioned in other forums, you know, when we go down this path of republic review, because I've had people come, oh, you know, this whole thing could be derailed. Soros can corrupt this. And no, you can't. When you understand the audit process, and the audit process is going to be in the light of day, everybody's going to be able to look at that and say, oh, what about this? That's unconstitutional too. What about this? And they're not going to be able to get away with trying to sweep anything under the rug, because we're going to be there, and we're all going to be there, holding the states accountable to doing their job. And I believe that if we elect those people and we get those people now, that's why we need you working with us now before the election of 2022 to start identifying. You need to be that person. And if you are going to be that person to be a state legislator, you need to get engaged with us so that we can start helping you, talking to you about how to start campaigning, about how to create a coalition of, you know, other candidates, as well as the existing legislatures who are already in office that are the champions of republic review and full compliance with the Constitution. As we start bonding together and we start actually creating this association, we can wear that label well. We can wear it with pride. There's no reason why we should ever shrug and say, you know, oh, well, you know, I'm not compromised because I'm not taking money so that I can support somebody's agenda. I happen to have, you know, you don't shrug your shoulders of integrity when you have integrity and you're doing the, you know, absolutely the right thing by the citizens in protecting their liberty. Now, maybe many of these citizens may be misinformed to think that it's your job to bring, you know, jobs there and to pour federal money into your area. No, it's not. It's your job to actually get these strings cut from the federal government that's keeping them from having their own jobs, that's keeping them from going and being able to harvest their timber, being able to mine the minerals under their land, to be able to use the resources that the federal government has no constitutional standing or authority to constrain from the states. When these state legislatures understand how they can make everybody that wants to become self-reliant and successful step up, you got to be willing to work. And then you can actually be self-reliant. Once people start getting that, they're going to walk away from the trough of slavery and statism and move over to independence and becoming their own person, man, woman, whatever, right? And that's what we need in America. If we're going to be successful, we have to help prepare them for the boon that is going to hit. The states have to realize that the money that will come from an economic boon will just overwhelm them compared to the stipends that the federal government is giving them to keep them in check. You realize that what they're doing is the world globalist agenda. The only reason why American beef is not being sold and harvested in America is because they want to elevate the lower standard beef, the lower standard poultry, and all the other lower standard meats and food products coming from Brazil and the rest of the world so that we can elevate them with our wealth. This is called the quid pro quo. This is also called the redistribution of wealth. And this all started under Obama, and actually Bush was the culprit that pushed this catalyst to actually inflate the prices of, because all the money, all the food was really at that point in time under Bush, most of the food was still coming from the United States. And so when the prices inflated, it made it easier for other countries to be competitive in selling their wares elsewhere. Well, okay, then the United States started passing laws to basically state that, oh, you can't produce meat, you know, in this kind of circumstance. So they made it harder and harder to get food into the processing plants and into these mills. And they made it, if you look at the standards of these other countries in contrast to America, you're going, oh my gosh, what the heck are they doing? They're deliberately stifling production in America that forces us to buy more expensive meat from other countries. Let's start waking up. Let's start actually actualizing what needs to happen. And as a matter of fact, states need to be aware. They need to get this message, my friends, that it is their responsibility to take care of their citizens in dire need. In other words, if all of a sudden there's a famine, who's going to feed the people of their state? They should not think that the unconstitutional concept of grain silage for a national reserve of food and petroleum and energy is the federal government's job. It's the state's job. They need to be able to take care of their people. Now, there are certain states that need to have that safety net, you know, addressed on an annual basis because they get hit with hurricanes. They get hit with, you know, common disasters all the time. So those states need to be more ready. And it's unfair for the rest of the states to constantly be bailing out these other states. Bottom line, when you live on the coastline and you could be, you know, your home, your property can be wiped away from a hurricane or the tidal surges or what have you, then you have to live with that risk and pay for the insurance to cover that. That's what anybody would do to cover their resources. But no, people, you know, overextend themselves to try to live a life that they, you know, they can't even afford. And then they turn, oh, you got to help me. Come on. You understood the consequences. You understood the risks. Come on. What part are you really going to tell us that you're that stupid you didn't know? Come on, friends. It's time we all started being honest with ourselves and everybody else. And it's time we actually started looking at the high road and holding ourselves to saying, you know what? It was the risk. The tidal surge wiped me out, and I either have to rebuild to stay here, or I need to go somewhere where I don't have to deal with this type of threat. And so we have to start having those difficult and honest conversations, because it's wrong for us to look at the government and say, hey, I like living on the coast, and you have to help subsidize me so I can do this. But you know who actually gets away with that? The people that actually get away with that subsidizing are the rich and the affluent who are living on the coast, you know, in Malibu and what have you. Oh, we gotta bail us out. And the government does, because they're the ones that are buying their positions. That's got to stop, friends. That has to stop, and it can stop. And on G.R. Mobley, we're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.